You heard Doper Than Dope. My name is Teacher. Keep it real. Hip hop.
What's up? It's Reverie, and you are now tuned in to Doper Than Dope.
This is Doper Than Dope.
Doper Than Dope.
Doper Than Dope.
My name is Suki.
This is MC Melody.
Ich bin Haskara.
I'm Jürgen Blackrock.
My name is DP.
My name is Rebecca Lane.
What's cracking, y'all? It's your girl Gavlin.
Big shout out to Doper Than Dope.
Doper Than Dope.
Doper Than Dope.
Keep it fresh. That's how we do.
Hi, it's Nifty, and you're listening to Doper Than Dope. One of my favorite MCs goes by the name of Reverie. You might already know this podcast's episode with her and DJ Lala that was a rewind episode. I did an interview with the two of them back in 2015, and now, almost 10 years later, I sat down with Reverie again after her gig in Hamburg this year in March. So we just caught up on what's been happening in her career since 2015, how her music has evolved. We talk about her phenomenal album Russian Roulette and so much more. So let's get started with Reverie on Doper Than Dope.
Hey, it's Reverie coming all the way from the West Coast. I just rocked Stellwerk in Hamburg tonight, and it was lit. The crowd was crazy. It was full. It was jam-packed, and a lot of people were singing my songs and had my shirts on, and it was a vibe.
Yeah, it was so amazing to see you again. I mean, I've seen you for, I don't know how many, but multiple times on stage, and it's always like, just fire, it's pure dopeness.
Thank you.
And it was really cool to see you do a freestyle. Honestly, I don't think I've ever seen you do a freestyle on stage.
Really?
Really?
Oh, wow.
I think.
Like, I don't always do it.
Yeah.
Like, I definitely do not always do it.
So, yeah, that was really, really cool. Like, because it was so dope, you know, because
thank you.
Sometimes you have those MCs and they do a freestyle and I'm sorry, but it's kind of whack.
Yeah.
Like their rhymes are whack and their flow and their ideas. And you know, it was so fun, like so much fun. Really nice.
Thank you. You know, as the years have gone by, I guess I've decided that I like to incorporate more humor into my sets, especially because my music is, as you know, a lot of it's very intense. It could be very angry, it could be very heartbroken, it could be very depressed. And like, I feel like it's kind of hard to give somebody that for an hour, you know? And so that's why I've tried to incorporate more humor into my sets over this is a new thing. It's barely been a couple years, I don't know, 2-3 years maybe, that was even a thought. Because it's been difficult making the music that I make and then putting it into a live show, because people, a lot of times, they come to the live show, they want to party. They want to turn up. And I'm talking about, like, all this deep stuff, you know? So I felt like I just needed a little bit more balance. And I guess, finally, here I am 10 years later.
Yeah.
Touring 10 years. And now I feel like I have a really good balance with the humor and the intenseness.
Mm-hmm. Yes, definitely. With my first question, I want to go way, 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 way back.
Mm-hmm.
What was the first ever hip-hop album that you listened to?
Oh my god, the first hip-hop album? I mean, I want to say it was probably an NWA album, and that was like before my time, but the reason being, my dad was like a huge NWA fan, so he was like putting us on. Also, another one of his favorite albums, which is one of my favorite albums, is Nelly, Country Grammar.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
I don't know how old I was when that came out, but I was little, like 5 or 7. I don't really know. But I just remember, like, that album, when my dad would play it, it just hit different, you know? It's still to this day, like, Nelly's one of my favorite, and that's one of my favorite albums. And those are probably, like, the ones that I could see off top, like, when I was so little, you know, that I could really remember. Another one that is for sure, TLC, Fan Mail.
Oh my god!
It's like hip hop,
yes.
R&B, you know. But
yeah,
I was
nice.
Obsessed. Holy
hell
shit!
Yeah.
another one was like Linkin Park.
Mm-hmm.
I was obsessed with Linkin Park. Khalees, even though she's R&B, hip hop ish, but
Khalees is so dope.
Oh wow! Yeah, hey. She. I would say those are probably like my earliest like albums. You know, like there's other songs I was listening to around that time, but I would say albums. Oh, also like 50 Cent, Get Rich or Die Trying.
Mm-hmm.
Oh no! What was that his first one?
Or was it the massacre?
Oh.
Whatever was the first one.
All right.
I was listening to that.
All right.
50 Cent, me and my brothers. Oh, man.
Yeah. Nice. And what would you say? And that's a really hard and maybe even mean question, but what is your favorite rap album of all time?
Wow, my favorite rap album of all time. Jesus Christ, I've never even thought of that. You know what? Damn, you know what? I know I'm going to say later. Oh, I should have said that.
Of course.
But I don't know. Let me think about that and come back to that.
Okay, we'll come back to that.
I mean, I don't know. Let me just say a few that I like, because I don't know if I could pick one. But for sure, Dr. Dre, The Chronic, 2001 is one of the best albums of all time for me. Jay-Z, The Black Album is amazing. The Living Legends, Almost Famous. I was obsessed when I was a kid. Also, Atmosphere, The Lucy Ford. Immortal Technique, Revolutionary Volume 2. Again, 50 Cent, Get Richard Die Trying, Nelly, Country Grammar. Yeah, like, yeah. I don't know. There's a lot. Even Linkin Park, Hybrid Theory. I know that's like rock kind of, but it's for sure hip hop in there. I guess those would be like things I could off top remember. Oh, the Grand Caravan to the Rim of the World by 3MG. Yeah.
Now, this is like a crazy situation because we did our first interview 9 years ago.
Oh my God.
It was 2015.
Wow.
You were in Germany. Like, nice. I had organized an event.
Yes.
And you and DJ Lala came to play in Weimar, which is such a small town. And like, whenever I tell anyone, yeah, Reverie performed in Weimar, they're like, what? Hell no. They don't believe me.
That's so funny.
And it was, yeah, nine years ago. Mm-hmm. Crazy.
It is.
And so I kind of want to reminisce with you on the past 10 years. How do you feel hip-hop has changed in the past 10 years or evolved?
I feel like it's evolved a lot, and I think that it's a beautiful thing because I feel like, you know, hip-hop's been around for a long time now. It's been around about, what, 40 years? Do we have the hip-hop anniversary, 40 years of hip-hop?
Or 50, I think.
Oh, 50. Okay, yeah. So that's a long time. You know, and I feel like for a while, for the first half of it, let's say, there was really a specific sound, you know? And I feel like maybe about 25 years ago, it really started changing, you know? And in the 2000s, really, you know? And that's when I was a kid listening to hip-hop, you know? And I feel like for a lot of time, the older generation didn't like that the newer generation didn't sound like them, you know? And they didn't really understand how or why that happened. But I feel like now enough time has passed that people are understanding that every generation has their own sound, you know? And we don't want to sound like the golden era. And that's no disrespect to them, because we wouldn't be here without them. And their music is amazing. But every generation is going to sound different. Just like how there's a new fashion every generation. There's new political views every generation. There's just so many changes. And I think that embracing the changes is a great decision to make in life, because life is never going to stop changing, even with technology, you know, like life just keeps moving and evolving. And I feel like it's a good habit to be open to different things happening in the world, because otherwise you become old and cynical and stuck in your ways and you don't understand life. You know, you're stuck 30 years ago, and you could be stuck back there, but the rest of everybody kept moving, you know? And I think it's great. I love the new sounds every year. Every few years it's changing, and I fucking love it. There's so much good hip-hop coming out. Like, when people are like, oh, there's no good hip-hop, like, there's so much good hip-hop coming out. Maybe you don't understand it, or maybe you do and you just don't like it, and that's fine. But me, I'm enjoying it. I'm enjoying all the new sounds. I like a lot of new artists, and I think it's fun seeing the changes, and it's exciting. Keeps you on your toes, you know? And also another thing that's happened is that there's a lot of female rappers now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a beautiful thing. You know, when I started 10 years ago, there was not a lot of female rappers. There's still not as many as the men, but there's a lot more now. And I think that's a beautiful thing. And also even like rappers from different countries. Like, I know that, for example, Germany always had their own rappers, you know, but they were not as big mm-hmm. as the new ones are now. Mm-hmm. And that's like the same thing that happened in America. You know, hip hop was so small, but now hip hop is the main music in our country. And then all over the world, this is happening in Brazil, in Spain, in Russia, wherever it is. Like, people used to pretty much only listen to American rap mm-hmm. was the main thing that everybody knew. But now every country has their hip hop in their language is the main hip hop. And then, of course, the American stuff is sprinkled in there. But it was not always like that. And I think that is so beautiful for me to see that change happen. Like, it is really cool. Yeah. I love it. I think it's beautiful.
Yeah. And the change you talked about with the female MCs, like, that's something where you really pioneered, I believe.
Thank
like,
you.
No, definitely. Like, it is so inspiring because, you know, you need someone to look up to. You need, like, someone to be inspired by. And when you're, I don't know, a little girl, a woman, whatever, and all you ever see is men doing it.
Yes.
Like, how would you get the idea that you could do it? But then when you see people like you who has been doing it for so long, like, that is so inspiring.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Thank you so much.
Yeah. And now going back from hip hop in general to mm-hmm. your personal growth mm-hmm, in mm-hmm. the past 10 years as an artist, how would you describe it?
Wow, that's a deep question. I guess, as an artist, I feel like I have really become very comfortable with myself. For a long time, I felt like I had to sound a certain way. And when I stopped sounding like that specific sound that everybody knew me for the first few years of me doing that, I definitely paid a bad consequence because a lot of people didn't like the change. Because, again, it comes back to that people don't like change in general. But I didn't let that stop me because I didn't want to be in that box that I was in 10 years ago. I didn't want to keep doing that. I didn't want to be in that scene. I didn't want to be on those lineups. I didn't want to be, you know, like, that's, and I've broken away. I'm not part of that scene that I was part of 10 years ago. I'm on a lot of different lineups than I was 10 years ago. And sometimes I'll still do those lineups, and those lineups are cool. Don't get me wrong. But I just didn't want to be stuck there because a lot of people get stuck in a box. And that's, a lot of people make a lot of money in those boxes. So it's not about the money, you know? But yeah. I just wanted to be able to do what I wanted to do. And I feel like now that people understand that I am going to make whatever sounds I want to make, people like that. Mm-hmm. And it's opened up so many doors for me having these new sounds. Like, it's crazy. Like, it's really cool. And that wasn't even the intention. Mm-hmm. The intention was, I'm going to make this music because that's what I want to do, you know? But it, and then, you know, the universe really rewards you for doing you, you know, and I did it. And like I said, for a few years, the numbers all tanked. The numbers went down. And that was a hit to my artistic ego and my personal ego. And I was like, whatever, like, the numbers are not the most important thing for me. They're still not. They never were. And I'm just glad that I followed that path because in the end, it's all working out. And my numbers are going back up.
Yeah.
And that's fucking awesome.
Yes. Yes, yeah. It is. If you could travel back in time to Reverie 2015, sitting in that hotel room in Weimar, what would you tell her?
Oh, that, you know, that was a really, really, really rough year for me. That was probably one of the roughest years of my life. And I would just tell her that you're making the right decision by choosing yourself. And the more you do that, the easier life will get. So I would tell her to keep her head up and to stick to the plan and to only keep people around you that value you. I would tell her to believe in herself, and I would tell her to get help for her drug addiction because that was a big issue for me for a long time. It's not anymore, thank God. But that was something that I definitely had to overcome to get to where I am now as well. Yeah, I would say keep your head up, and in the end, everything works out, so don't fucking kill yourself.
Oh, my God.
That's about it.
All right. I wanted to read something back to you that you said in that interview 2015.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
You were talking about how you had been hurt by your parents. And then you said, I forgave them for that. I'm not mad about that anymore. I've made peace with that. And it feels great to have that peace. And I love that. It's so beautiful. It is really hard to forgive someone who has really pained you, caused you pain. But I think what you said there is so beautiful, because forgiving someone is also something you do for yourself, for your inner peace. But it is really hard to do that.
And I feel like that's a continuous process. You know, I, in general, I have forgiven them. But a lot of times, especially because I am working on myself, because I am trying to become a better person and I'm consciously putting in the effort to do that. I'm not just saying, oh, I hope I get better. No, I'm doing the work. When you do the work on yourself, a lot of stuff from your past comes up. And a lot of times it pisses me off the way the things that my parents did and didn't do for me, you know? And then I might get upset again, you know, and then I have to work on forgiving them again. And it helps having conversations about it. And if I can't have a conversation with them about it, I'll have a conversation with my friends about it. If I can't have a conversation with my friends about it, I'll have a conversation with my lyrics and the beat about it, you know? And it's just forgiveness for some people in our life, specifically like our parents, people who are going to be in our life who have been there since the beginning, you're going to get hurt by them. And we don't want to hurt our loved ones, but unfortunately, it's just part of life. Because we're all flawed and fucked up in our own ways. And I feel like it's a continuous process, forgiveness. And it's a really good skill that I'm really trying to continue to develop.
Yeah, that's nice. How has writing raps helped your that process or even like your healing process?
You know, my writing has probably done about half the healing, honestly. I just started doing therapy this year. Was it this year or last year, I think? No, I think it was last year. And I've only done a few sessions. No, it was last year. I've only done a few, like, five sessions or something. So before that, it was just my music. You know, my lyrics were always my therapy. My lyrics were my outlet. My lyrics were what kept me sane and let me reflect on what was going on in my head, you know, because we can go crazy and recycle the same thought all day, all month, all year. But when you write down the thought and you read it back to yourself, it just gives you a little bit of a different perspective, you know. And then especially with me writing it down and then sharing it with people and hearing their feedback, seeing their reaction to it, gives me a different perspective again, you know. So my lyrics have always been, since I was a kid, a form of therapy, and they still are. They still are. They're still an outlet. And I definitely wouldn't be here had I not picked up that outlet, that creative outlet. Yeah. As you know, I've dealt with a lot of mental problems since I was a kid. And my music has saved me time and time and time again. And now I get to travel the world saving other people's lives with it. And it's so cool. And I'm so grateful.
Man.
So grateful.
Yeah. That's awesome. In your music, you talk a lot about how it was rough growing up where you did. And even tonight on stage, you talked about the song The Basement, like how, you know, I mean, how you literally started in a corner of your grandma's basement. And I believe, like, me and probably a lot of the listeners of this podcast can't really imagine what it was like growing up in Highland Park, which is a part of LA. Can you put us a little bit, like, through that experience, what it was like growing up there and how it has affected your music?
Yeah. So, you know, a lot of the movies that are, like, about gangs and drugs and mafia stuff in LA, like, it's really like that. But I will say, it's not like that for everybody, you know? Like, not everybody gets into a gang, you know? It's just, like, a possibility when your parents are not doing their job. Really, like, that's what it really comes down to. Like, everybody I knew that was kicking in with us, they didn't have good parents. And their parents were doing the best that they could with the knowledge that they had. But, you know, sometimes you just don't have the skills to do certain things. And unfortunately, if you are raised in a neighborhood where there's gangs and drugs, if you don't have the right guidance, there's a possibility that you will fall into that lifestyle with gangs and drugs. And it's really prominent in Latino communities, in Black communities. And it's definitely something that I got into when I was a kid. And it caused a lot of turbulence in my life and in my home. And it's real. Like the things they portray in the movies, it's real. The murder really happens. The fighting really happens. The tattoos really happen. The people getting life sentences really happens. People overdosing on drugs really happens. I have friends that have been through all of that stuff. My first love from high school is doing life in prison right now for murder. And now he's in there in the Mexican mafia murdering people all the time. That's who he is. That's what he has to do to survive, or he will be killed himself. You know, and that's it's real. It's real. And like I said, not everybody gets into it, and God bless everybody who does. I hope they can make it out, because a lot of people don't. But it's it was really rough the way I grew up. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Does it make you mad when people talk about that and haven't experienced it? Like when rappers, for example, who pretend to had been in that kind of life, but then they haven't, but they sell records talking about it.
Yeah.
Is it like, how is that for you?
You know, it's kind of mixed feelings, because art is an expression, you know, and I would never tell somebody what kind of art to make or not make. So as far as like it being your art, I understand why people do it. It could be very lucrative. Also, some people just think that lifestyle is cool because they haven't lived it. That's why they think it's fucking cool, because it's not cool when you're in it. But as like a personal preference, I don't listen to people who make that music that haven't lived it. That's what I'll say. I won't damn them for doing it, but I'm not listening to that shit. I don't need to hear somebody who didn't live the gangster life talk about the gangster life. And it's easy to see right through it. If you've lived through it, mm-hmm. you can see right through it. Mm-hmm. The people that are acting or rapping about it and never had a scratch on their face and no scars on their hands. I know, mm-hmm. you know, like there's just a look in your eye that you get when you've been through some shit, you know? Yeah, and I can see it.
All right. Another thing that happened 10 years ago was your Russian Roulette album. Mm-hmm. Dropping. It is to this day one of my favorite albums of yours. Not just of yours, like of all time. I think it is really, really amazing, with songs like While I'm Still Here and Stagnant and Always Down. Yes. Like that's just like every song. Like I could just list every song, honestly.
It's a great album.
It is a great album. And I read somewhere, or you also said tonight, it's one of your favorite projects.
Absolutely.
Of yours as well.
Absolutely.
Can you talk a little bit about that? What makes it so special for you?
I just think that the whole album is really well done as far as the production. I mean, not as far as the production, because the production was not that good back then, because Loudon just didn't really know how to mix and master yet. Mm-hmm. But his beats were amazing.
Yeah.
The beats, and also my raps, like the storytelling, the passion, the roller coaster, the emotional roller coaster that it gives you, the knots in your stomach that it gives you, the tears that it makes fall out of your face. You know, it's a very emotional album. And I think that it's just a really, really, really good record. And I feel like I can't even listen to that record. I don't like to hear that record. If I hear that record, it's me choosing to consciously go into a dark hole. Mm-hmm. So I actually don't listen to that record.
Yeah, yeah.
So actually, to do this process of remastering the album was very difficult, because I had to hear the whole album a few times.
Yeah.
And it was very difficult going back there. And I'm glad that that part of my life is over. But I'm also glad that I encapsulated it into a project that heals people, mm-hmm. that are going through dark times, because it's a dark album.
Yeah, it is. And it is so powerful. Like songs like Say Something, like that's one that gives me goosebumps all over my body. It is so intense. Mm-hmm. And it is so courageous of you to put something so real out there.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Hell, I appreciate that.
So the space you create through your art is a space where very different people come together. And I know that a lot of your fans are part of the queer LGBTQ community.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. I'm as well.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
And, you know, being part of that community, I know the pain about not belonging, about mm-hmm. getting shamed, about mm-hmm. getting verbally and physically attacked mm-hmm. for just existing. Like, mm-hmm. that's really happening, like, everywhere, also in Germany. Like,
yeah.
that's really a part of our experience.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah.
And I've always supported the LGBT community, even in my lyrics, even in my music, like,
no,
since the beginning. Where I grew up, a lot of my closest friends are gay or bisexual. And so for me, it's not a big deal. It's like, who cares what people do behind closed doors? Like, people, I'll tell people, like, I don't want to see two gay people kissing, but I don't even want to see two straight people kissing either. I don't want to see any, but you could, kissing's cool. Once the tongue comes out, please take it to a room. I don't care who it is. And once you get behind that room, I don't care what you do.
A lot of people, including me, have been really empowered by your songs because you talk so much about being yourself, being true to yourself, not being ashamed, about loving yourself, about telling people to fuck off if they tell you you're not worthy of love.
Yeah.
And that is so powerful. And so I want to thank you for that, first
yeah,
of all.
Yeah, thank you. My pleasure. It's amazing to be able to do that for people. It's really cool. It's unbelievable a lot of the times.
Yeah. Yeah, and then, like, quite a while ago, you posted a reel on Instagram about mm-hmm. a bad situation you had mm-hmm. with, I don't know, maybe a trans woman, maybe mm-hmm. a cis man.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know, and I don't even want to get into that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I know you got some shit from multiple sites for
yes.
that, and I don't believe you're a hateful person at all. Like,
yeah.
I don't believe that. I have never believed that.
Yeah.
The thing that was kind of concerning to me or mm-hmm. kind of, yeah, made me feel bad was reading the comment section
yes.
on those videos and, like, so many people who follow you saying, like, really hurtful, aggressive things mm-hmm. towards that community.
Yeah.
So that's that space mm-hmm. that you created mm-hmm. that has been safe for so many people. Like, it was like it got taken over by, like, hateful people
mm-hmm.
For that moment.
Yeah.
And you're not responsible for your fans, of course. But I think you probably care about, like, the way they get into the space you create and how they transform that. And so I wanted mm-hmm. to ask you, like, how do you feel about it? And how do you manage that part of your mm-hmm. artistry where you can't control everything that's happening under your mm-hmm. name, but you probably want to keep it welcoming for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
So that has to be, like, really hard to handle.
It's very hard to handle when it comes to political issues. And it sucks because I'm not even into politics. And I hate that everything has become a political issue. Like, it's very stressful. And so whenever me as a public figure, when I speak up on a political issue, it causes a lot of turbulence. Okay. And that's not what I want to do. I'm just speaking my mind because people like what I say, you know, and sometimes it can backfire. And with that situation that you brought up, I had an experience where there was a man came out of the women's restroom. It was not a trans woman. It was a man in the women's restroom. And I was like, I was scared because he was getting aggressive with me. And anyways, when I posted that, yeah, I mean, most people were saying, like, yeah, I agree with you. I agree with you. A lot of people were saying, no, you're wrong. You're wrong. I'm not saying anybody's right or wrong. I'm just saying that's just how I feel. Unfortunately, a lot of people did start coming and saying a transphobic comments, and it got out of control. And that's out of my control. This is, like I said, it happens whenever I talk about a political issue. I cannot control all the comments. You know, the thing is, like, how you're talking about, like, keeping it a safe space. The problem is, which it's a good problem. The problem is that my fan base is too big for that now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's so many people, and I've talked about this too with people, like, when I first started, before you even knew who I was, the first year, maybe they're not even the first year, the first 3 months of me making music, the only people who knew my music was my friends and my friends' cousins and my friends' neighbors and my friends' friends. So when I was posting my music on MySpace, it was all good comments.
Yeah.
But after the fourth month, it wasn't like, oh, that's my friend's friend. Oh, that's my cousin's friend. I know her. I met her. Now it's like this, to a lot of people, I'm just a person on the internet that's not even real. I'm just a character on the internet to these people. You should see the hate. You think the hate comments were bad on that post? You should see the hate comments that I get every day, every single day. All the comments that you saw on that post that were really mean and horrible, I get those every day about me. And it's really, really, really difficult. And a lot of people say, oh, just ignore. I do as best as I can. But fucking 90, one out of those 100 comments that I'm getting over a span of 30 days on the bad day when I'm about to start my period, they hit a little different.
Yeah.
And it might hit a soft spot. And unfortunately, that's just part of being a public figure. And I'm sorry for people who get offended in my comments. That's not why I talk about things. I don't want to offend people. But I do want to open up a conversation sometimes about things that I think are important. But it's difficult. It's difficult dealing with crazy people on the internet. I have to do that every day, and it's very draining.
Okay, Reverie, let's wrap this up. Thank you so much for taking the time. Okay, so wrapping this up, which question do you not want to hear ever again?
Do you write your own lyrics?
Oh, my God.
And only because I don't think that people ask men that question.
Hell yeah.
That's the only reason why. If they ask men that question, I wouldn't care. But they always ask me because I'm a girl. And I don't like that. And now I've actually started telling people, I have a question for you before I answer that. Do you ask men that question?
Nice.
And they always lie and say, yeah, I ask everybody.
Okay. Sure. Yeah, sure. Of course.
Okay. I'll say that one.
Okay, and which question should people ask you more often, but they never do?
Maybe like asking me about how I am in such a better mental state nowadays and how I have overcome my drug addictions and depression and suicidal thoughts. I would say that's probably more important. And I feel like that's why a lot of people follow me too. They are amazed by it. I'm amazed by it. I can't believe how different I was 10 years ago. And I'm very blessed to have progressed in those areas of life. Yeah.
Nice. All right. Thank you, Reverie.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I appreciate it. And I appreciate you supporting me for so many years and sharing this platform with me. And to everybody that's discovering me for the first time through this interview, nice to meet you and check out my music. I'm on Spotify, Apple Music. I have 14 albums out, all indie. Never had a record deal, never been signed to a major label. This is all indie and born and raised in Northeast Los Angeles.
And that's it for this month's episode of Doper Than Dope. Go ahead and check out Reverie. As she said, there's a ton of her music released. You can find it on Spotify and wherever you stream music. I highly recommend checking out this artist's incredible work. My name is Nifty MC. Thank you for listening. Special thanks if you share this podcast and leave a 5-star rating. It's highly appreciated. Take care and tune in again next time on Doper Than Dope.